I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, and it is the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, Geeks of the World, and you. Thank you. Nice timing. To keep you current on all the things that matter most, I'm Scott Johnson, and that's Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
I am so looking forward to today's show. We got some amazing guests with us.
Don't we, though? It's fantastic. I'm excited because this is my last fun hurrah until I have to go to an auction dinner thing tonight. I have to wear a tie to and all kinds of stuff.
Do you have to buy your dinner at auction?
Ugh. Yeah.
I'll give $20 for that steak.
That's too much. I'm not actually sure what to expect, but I'm on the way out the door the minute this show is done. And so this is a nice way for me to escape from that stress for a little bit and hang out with you and two fabulous guests. Our first guest, Garnett Lee, everybody, finally on a Frog Pants show. Garnett, what's going on?
Hey, I'm excited to be here, by the way.
Thank you.
If you did not know already, I am pretty excited to be here.
Well, I'm stoked to have you. I've often looked for an excuse to get Garnett Lee, one of my favorite video game commentators on the internet, on a show that I do, and I don't know what took so long. It just was a matter of, oh yeah, here's one, and he could do this. So here you are, and I'm really glad you came on, man. Thanks so much.
And the future lies ahead.
Yes. Also with us, the doctor of the second season of Next Generation. You know him as Adam Pawlowski. Just kidding. I put Pelowskin in the chat in the thing.
Yeah, I was just noticing that.
I don't know why I did that.
I'm glad we have Adam instead of Adam Pawlowski.
It's Adam Pawlowski, right?
Pawlowski.
Pawlowski,
close enough.
All right. Are you mad at a whole generation of Trek viewers? They've screwed up your name forever. There's just nothing they can do about it?
Ironically, the family was actually very excited. There was a Polish person descent on the show, so they were just more happy to see a fellow Polak.
Well, that's great. Know. That's good. So I am excited to say one thing before we get going here, and that is, and we got a lot to talk about today, but confirmed an upcoming guest on the show, not to take away from our current awesome guests, because they're rad. But we are going to have one Greg Ghostcrawler Street, formerly of Blizzard, now of Riot Games, will be joining us on a future episode.
Oh, I have a question about that. Is he still off the leash, even though he's at Riot Games?
He is completely. In fact, he's more off the leash. He can talk even more about things he wants to without having to be leashed. And he's a big fan, so it was just an easy thing to get him on here. So we're excited about the future. Let's talk about the present and the top stuff of the day.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Thomas?
Eugene, Oregon leads us off this week, where freelance writer Hudson Hongo hails from. Why do you care about Hudson Hongo? Because he is the brilliant person who took scenes from the first Star Wars and dubbed over the sound effects with his own personal collection of noises, as they call it.
Yeah, kind of Foley work, I guess you could say.
Yeah, he Foleyed them, exactly.
It's fantastic. I'm just going to play a piece of it. You guys get a taste of what's going on here. So this is him.
Bye-bye.
Star Wars intro. Okay.
That's him. If you're like, why is Scott making... No, that's not Scott.
Now this is him walking with Vader and Obi-Wan facing off on the Death Star with their lightsabers askew. It gets real good here in a second. Here all right, here's R2.
More hilarious than just audio.
Anyway, it doesn't do it justice unless you can watch it. But here's a scene with Chewbacca and Han Solo that I really like. Here's this right here. You hear little Han Solo first.
Didn't we just leave this party?
That's his Chewbacca. It's fantastic. So I would ask you guys, is there anything greater than taking old, famous, movies that matter to the hearts and minds of nerds everywhere and adding your own Foley effects? How brilliant is that? Garnett, go make one. What are you going to do? What's first?
Well, I think that rather than, going back to The New Hope, which really is, very near and dear to my heart, yeah, he should have started with episode one.
Yeah.
Because episode one deserves this treatment as much as any geek movie out there.
Yeah. Adam, you've argued for the prequels with me before. Aren't you a non-hater? You kind of think all of it's good?
I totally get where folks come from, where the prequels were not the same tone, timbre, and feel of the original movies. In hindsight, I like the story they tell about the bad guys. And if you watch them from that point of view, they're, as far as canon, I'm fine with it as a whole. But you know, I mean, I've kind of excused myself from defending them at this point. I get why people were unhappy. You know?
I'm kind of with you, Adam. Actually, I enjoyed them for what they served within the storyline, within the fiction. But there are some cringeworthy moments in those, especially the Watto and oh my goodness.
I totally agree. I get that. You know, but I think Ian McDiarmid as Palpatine gets very excellent. Unnoticed. For really turning out a phenomenal, like he is the Nails whole it. Story. Yeah. He is at the center of it all, and he really plays it through those very well. And that's where I get my enjoyment from. And I do actually like Hayden Christensen as Anakin. I thought he pulled off that.
It sounded like you said I do enjoy hating Christensen, and I was going to agree with you there. But
No. Right. I mean, I don't mind him. You know, the love scenes are sappy, but young love is ridiculously sappy. So I suppose I look at it from that point of view. Sure. But in hindsight, yeah, you know, if you've ever watched the featurettes on The Phantom Menace, there's one about the casting of Jake Lloyd. And to this day, I'm like, no, they should have gone with the other kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't even know who the other kid is.
There was another kid that was in the running, and he would have been perfect. And this Jake Lloyd, no offense, man, you tried. You did the best you could for a 9-year-old kid, but it just didn't quite come together for
that's
him.
Right. So imagine that movie now, though, with this. And
it gets better.
Improved.
I'm Watto. Your Foley don't work on my Italian stereotype.
That's not bad. That's pretty good. All right. There you go. There's your Star Wars for today.
The third Hobbit movie is officially getting a subtitle change. Yes, I say subtitle because they're all titled The Hobbit and then whatever comes after that. So There and Back Again is going to be called The Battle of the Five Armies. Peter Jackson said There and Back Again worked fine when they only had two movies, and he started the second movie before he got there. But now that he's actually starting the third movie with Bilbo already there, didn't feel so right. He also wrote, as Professor Tolkien intended, There and Back Again encompasses Bilbo's entire adventure. So don't be surprised if you see it used on a future box set of all three.
Does anyone really have Garnett, do you have a problem with the way this sounds? It sounds a little like, I don't want to compare it back to Star Wars again and say Attack of the Clones was, you know, that this is anything like that. But it does seem to be tapping into people's desire for high action and, hey, this one's going to have a bunch of, you know, scenes of mayhem and armies in them. You know what I mean? Does it feel cheap?
Sure. Just, you know, whatever it takes to stretch it out to three movies, because Starbucks needs to sell more coffee in theaters, and Lord knows you needed it through the first two.
Yeah, but is the law of threes at play here? Like, you know, Zelda can't beat that boss until there are three things to do, you know? Mario has to bonk him on the head three times.
Five armies. I don't know. It's a clever argument for, you know, rhetoric, but it's really, I'm sort of soured a little bit on The Hobbit simply from stretching it out so far. You know, I loved The Lord of the Rings. I loved the way, especially the extended editions, let it breathe and be exactly what I wanted out of a film rendition of that. I have not had that same warm feeling from The Hobbit movie so far.
Adam, where have you enjoyed them?
Yeah. But I totally get what you're saying, Garnet, because There and Back Again sort of promised that you would come back. This would end. Whereas Battle of Five Armies sort of leaves the door open. Like, we could just
Don't even tempt them. Peter would love to go back to New Zealand for another couple of years and fool around.
Sure.
Oh, my goodness. I get why some people are like, what these feel like. This is what it felt like for me, because I heard people complain about, you know, when I went into the first one, how long it was. I was really happy to be back in Middle Earth. I didn't mind that it took that long. But what I felt like I was seeing was this was his extended cut, and they're letting him put it out in theaters. Like, this is what we would have gotten on the super extra director's cut edition DVD 3 years from now. But the name change, whatever. You know, they just want to let people know, oh, by the way, you know, there's something else. It wasn't all about the dragon. I suspect that's what this is about, to let the general public know, yeah, we know you saw the dragon, there's more coming.
Yeah.
Is probably what this is all about.
Good call.
It'll be interesting. I think the name's fine. I don't really have a problem with it. And I kind of like that second movie a lot better than the first one, except for the that weird animated let's go down the river in barrels thing really bothered me.
Disney water ride?
Yeah, I didn't like that. I didn't like how exacting everything was. It was just too... I don't mind slapstick in my Hobbit movies. That's fine. But it was just like, that was the most, not since Legolas slid down the front of that elephant thing in the third movie, in the third Lord of the Rings movie.
Olyphant.
Yeah, all that stuff just, it rubs me a little wrong because it's just too, I don't know. You're not going to hit. You're not going to hit everybody on the head exactly right. It isn't going to. Yes, it's not going to be like those. What's the machines with marbles and stuff? It's named after a dude, Rube Goldberg device. It's not like one of those where it's going to happen that way every time. That drove me slightly up a rope, but it's all fine now. I've gotten over
Scott,
it.
Scott, dwarves are merry folk.
Oh, I take it all back then. I'm good now.
You know who else is a merry folk? Independent developer Thomas Cadleck, who is the first person to issue something using the Unreal Engine 4, or at least they claim that. I bet it's not actually true, but he's one of the first anyway. Virtual reality demo where users can walk through the bridge of the Starship Voyager. You don't get any crew members showing up on the bridge, but you can hear commands and watch space battles using your Oculus Rift.
Whoa, that's cool. But the bigger deal here is Unreal 4, am I right? Because that's a great new engine and capable of all sorts of wonderful things. And, you know, seeing this in that glory sounds really, really good to me. I'm pumped about it.
You can have your Unreal Engine 4. I want the deck of all of these ships. I want to be on all the starships.
Yeah. I know. When I read this, I was like, but why did you start with Janeway's? Why not like the Enterprise?
You want each one to get better.
Yeah, all right. You got to work your way up. All right, fair enough.
Voyager's not all that bad. It has its moments, right?
I agree. The great characters.
Sure.
Not an awesome series.
Sure.
They'll be on the Excelsior next.
Yeah, it'll be like Sulu's. Whenever Sulu was captain of something briefly in Star Trek III, we'll check his ship out. Then we'll get to the ones people care about. But if you could give me just a package of all of these together and put that on my Oculus, that sounds nice. I'm assuming you can't charge for this, or else Paramount wants a piece of that, or at the very least, you know, they'd be ticked about it. But yeah, it sounds interesting. And Unreal 4, from what I've seen, various game demos and stuff that are coming out, Unreal 4 looks amazing. And to see this in that kind of detail and that kind of, I guess, clarity would be a real treat. I'd love it.
Does anybody here actually have an Oculus Rift?
I do.
You do? How do you like?
I like it. It's the original dev kit, right? So all the talk of the new 1080p stuff and how much better those are is frustrating to me because now I want that, not this. This was donated by a fan, so I guess I can't complain. But it's there's something there, man. Like when you put that thing on and you're presented with, like, I don't know, a virtual roller coaster or something, your senses don't exactly kind of know what to do at first. And I think that signals that we're getting there. Like, this could be something amazing. What happens to it in the future? We've talked on this show a bunch about the Facebook acquisition and what that means for money and development and who's going to get what and who's going to have to compete and Sony's Morpheus and all that other stuff. But I do feel like we are finally to a place that I was promised in the early 90s we'd be, which is, you know, an actual experience that virtualizes reality. And I'm excited about it.
Now, for a minute, I thought you were going to say Dave and Buster's.
I'd do that. I'd go to Dave and Buster's and wear one. Well, maybe I wouldn't.
I've done that. I've done that experience, disappointing as it was. What is interesting is the whole next generation of, like, MMO builders, you know, games are all developing with Oculus Rift in mind.
Right.
You know, I'm beta testing Landmark right now, the new world builder from Sony Online Entertainment. And I'm in that game going, I really want Oculus. Knowing that they're building this game to be compatible, I'm like, why can't wait to get my hands on the consumer version of that? And then things like Star Citizen and other big titles coming down the road are all building for this. So, this is a great start. Please do more. I want to travel. I want to be able to explore all of the major ships from Star Trek.
I feel like this is the bigger, and Garnett, jump on this if you think I'm wrong from a gaming perspective, but I feel like this is the big use for Oculus in the future. It isn't going to be so much about visceral gaming experiences. Those will exist, and certainly there'll be good examples of that and bad examples of that. But I think it will be more about take me places I can't go, or take me places that don't exist, you know?
The coolest game that I saw at GDC play was actually a translation of a point-and-click adventure-like game, you know, into a virtual experience through the Oculus Rift that was just mind-blowing. Mm. You know, imagine if you could go back in time to Myst and play a Myst-like game where you're completely immersed inside the game through the Oculus Rift. Because you're right. I mean, we haven't figured out exactly how to interact inside the virtual reality world. Mm. Like, do you want to wave around Move controllers, or do you want to have some sort of special control, or do you want to still use a controller? That's where that awkwardness starts to figure in. But if you're in an adventure game, quick control doesn't matter as much.
Right. Completely agree. That sounds awesome.
This conversation is really reminding me in an interesting way of the conversations around CD-ROM games.
Mm. Yeah. Ooh.
And I don't mean that as a slam.
Very similar.
Yeah.
No, you're in the right space.
Ooh, there's all kinds of things we can do, and we're not exactly sure which ones are going to catch on, and there's lots of demos and cool things that look cool as a demo but probably will never catch on, and vice versa.
Well, there in that case, you know, with the CD-ROM in gaming, that brought in the advent of full motion video. And full motion video gave the game developers the chance to tell really dramatic stories. Dramatic stories are in telling them in games have been what have been changing gaming over the last 5 years.
Sure.
So it is definitely a huge evolution in. And now I'm seeing in what Sony's promising with EverQuest Next and in their new game engine there, the AI that they're using with Storybricks, is the AI is going to be intelligent in this game and respond to what the players do. And I mean, we're building virtual worlds, you know, in a way, in an avenue, I don't think the general public expects. It's kind of interesting.
It's funny what you say about full motion.
It's a great time right now.
Yeah.
It's a great time if you're interested in this kind of thing.
And the full motion video thing is interesting because I think what, Tom, you got right to the core of it, which is when we played Sewer Shark or Night Trap, which were kind of garbage, right? I mean, they weren't great.
Yeah.
But there was something there, right? You got a taste of something. It was like, man, that would be perfect if I could interact with that person or if I could... These limitations would crop up where you realize, well, your only interactivity is left or right or move forward or, you know, hit something on time. And the same thing occurred with Laserdisc games and the arcades with, you know, Dragon's Lair and things like that. They just really opened your imagination to what could be. I just feel like we're now finally getting to a place where maybe the could be will be. It's just a question of this early stuff. Are the limitations going to hold us back so much that it doesn't catch on? Or are we going to quickly move past that? They're going to get lighter, simpler, wireless, more fidelity, and then suddenly we're in this future we all dreamed of. That's what I hope.
But here's the thing is, in much like the CD-ROM argument goes, now we're talking about tech, and every time we start talking about tech as relates to games, it just becomes an arms race, and it doesn't necessarily yield us better games.
Yeah.
I get much more excited about the fantastic future that, you know, a game like Shenmue aspired to. And I don't know if you're familiar with Shenmue, but Shenmue...
I love Shenmue.
And it aspired to creating a world that had this narrative story going on throughout it, but at the same time had a verisimilitude to it that was perfect. And you were always in the game and you were there in the game and you could go into the arcade and play the arcade games. Mm-hmm. And you had the fighting game that was a fighting game and you had the adventure and the story and all those pieces layered together. And we have not really pushed that horizon that far forward.
Yeah.
I mean, Grand Theft Auto sort of goes down that line, but we all know how well it's achieved, you know, real advancement from there, which is, to my mind, not that far.
Not really far. And you never, you know, still play a Grand Theft Auto game and have a great time, but notice that how many doors you still can't get into, how much of there is an edge still to the world or how much water you can't fall into or whatever.
So,
you know,
the point I guess I was trying to make is I'm more interested in the game design application that technology opens up as opposed to just the raw horsepower of the technology.
Yeah. I agree.
And there's some people doing some pretty intensive work on making movies for Oculus Rift and for VR, mm-hmm. which can inform that kind of game design. And I don't know that sort of thing was around for the CD-ROM era. Movies were movies. You didn't make them for a CD-ROM. So
yeah.
I could be missing something.
I think you're right. Plus, there was postage size stamp, you know, crappy video. None of that stuff was any good. And it's just so much fidelity, so much control, so much stuff going on with, you know, what our phones can even do in terms of knowing when we're pitching left or right and, you know, sensing these things in the world around us. I just feel like we're still kind of Wild West on it, but it's now looking very probable that we're going to hit at least some level of what we've all been dreaming about, which would be great.
Well, I can't decide whether I want to transition to the next element by talking about how you were sort of disappointed with the other video shows we talked about, and I think you might like this one, or we were just talking about something from the 90s, CD-ROM, and we're going to talk about something from the 90s too. But in a Wired article about the history of Mystery Science Theater 3000, Joel Hodgson says, quote, "I thought if enough people still love it, maybe we can bring it back." Even avid viewers sometimes don't realize that every major role in the show had been swapped out over time. So in my mind, the show is built to be refreshed with new people and new ideas. It's like Heisenberg's uncertainty principle as it applies to MST3K. If it doesn't change, it's not the same show. And fortunately for us, as long as there are movies, there are always going to be cheesy movies. Ooh. And Wired said that they're talking about bringing it back online with the new cast.
So isn't it an issue of who owns rights and stuff at this point? Because
I think so.
Because Riff Trax is essentially them splitting off, some of them.
And Cinematic off, Titanic.
Right, right. And they've got their own little factions and groups, and then none of them could use the Mystery Science name and any of the sort of imagery or any of that. So I can't tell, but I think I follow all of them on Twitter. It seems like they'd all be amenable to getting together again, but I think somebody weird owns the rights and they can't. There's something else with that going on. I don't know, but we're all fans, I guess, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
He seems to be implying that the rights might be either obtainable or affordable or something.
All right. Bring it on then.
There are. I think it was Io9 suggested, like, get a Netflix or an Amazon or even a Microsoft to plop down and fund this.
Yeah, and have them beam Netflix. I mean, look, my whole show FilmSack is nothing but us finding old crappy movies and watching them. And in a very real way, there's a callback to what Mystery Science Theater was all about. There's no reason why Netflix couldn't do a deal that said, look, we've got this giant library of crap that we already have the rights to talk about. This would encourage people directly to watch some of that crap on Netflix so it's not just sitting there. It's a great
Netflix would be perfect. You're right, because you can choose which version to watch.
Yeah, exactly. Garnett, yeah. What do you think, man?
Well, I think that if I was Microsoft, I would be already all over the phones trying to get this. You know, they want to build out original video content for Xbox Live service, and the way they positioned the Xbox One, it's really important to where they want to go with the box. Mm. And this is a perfect fit for the culture of the audience.
Well, they did Felicia Day's thing for a while, right? Weren't they doing the Guild on there? So they have precedence for it. You know,
exactly. So I just think it would be a great move for them. And I hate to feed the exclusive platform like that, but I do think it would be a great move for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why not? And there should be some kind of interactive element there too.
Right. Why not?
Imagine. Yeah. That's even better, because with Kinect and the whole thing of MST3K is the shadow play of you guys. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You could have a lot of fun with that. Yeah. You could be creative and have a lot of fun with that.
The Kinect would be, it would see you guys make silhouettes on it. Oh yeah.
You could make like your own little hand puppets to go along with the conversation.
There you go.
I'm in. Let's do it.
Yeah, me too.
I'll finally buy a one. I'll finally get an Xbox this year. That'll be good.
This is the point in the lineup where I got lazy, and so that's why we have a subreddit. And I turned to currentgeek.reddit.com for some ideas. Ladies and gentlemen, go there if you haven't done it. Every week I get to this point, and really I'm lazy. I don't want to choose any stories. I want you to choose them. So go to currentgeek.reddit.com. If you don't want to submit stories, you can just vote on the ones that everybody else did there. Panther Lady sent us this one. GameStop CEO Paul Raines was talking to investors about new plans for the company to, quote, aggressively expand its footprint into gaming adjacent tech fields. They're apparently specifically targeting mobile and Apple, and expect their brands Spring Mobile, which sells AT&T branded phones, as well as Simply Mac, which is a computer repair shop, to expand significantly. Meanwhile, they're going to close down between 120 and 130 of the gaming retail locations.
Yeah, and I was talking earlier on our show, The Final Score, this afternoon, about how they're a little bit like Starbucks where I live. They are really everywhere. And I feel like, I mean, this is a reminder that this is the year that we now have new current-gen consoles. They're no longer next-gen. This is the new stuff. And both of them support and widely publicize the fact that you can get your game pre-ordered and downloaded directly to the console for the same price without having to go to the store. So they're,
and without someone asking if you want to buy an extended warranty.
Right. None of that happens anymore. And they're doing what Steam's done for years, and Steam has already cut into the old PC retail business in that regard. Yeah. So like Garnett, I swear this is the reason that they're pulling back, because the writing's on the wall. If this is the digital future where they're no longer actively trying to protect their retailers by selling stuff digitally, we've finally gotten there, and there's no real advantage to going to the store unless they give you some steep discount or whatever, then why not close a few stores and change the way you think? It seems like a good move.
Don't we wish that was the case?
Yeah, kind
of. I mean, I think that really is a lot of wishful thinking. How many times have you so far seen on the consoles a better price for a digitally delivered game than regular? I mean, they've done it with the Zoo game. What's it called? Zoo Tycoon?
Sure.
On Xbox One, which is $39.99 digitally. I think they actually finally dropped the price on that in Walmart as well because it was a Walmart exclusive. But I think this is just cyclical case of what happens in retailers. If you're a retailer and over a couple of decades, you've opened locations in thousands of spots around the United States, economies change. Think about if you've lived in a town for 10 years, you know that the corner of a big intersection used to be undeveloped and now it is developed. And somewhere else, there's a spot that used to be heavily developed that's gone to pot since then. Plus, they were in malls, and we all know about the decline of big malls.
Yeah.
So this, I think this is really just a matter of them repositioning their physical inventory and their brick and mortar stores to align with whatever they're spending. It doesn't say whether or not they're opening more stores. I would be willing to bet you that they are opening stores as well in the right spots for them. And they're moving over to cell phones because, I mean, look, Best Buy is a crummy place to buy a cell phone and AT&T isn't much better. So why not get into those stores are all a mess.
Right.
As someone who once upon a time over a decade and a half ago was a district manager for Electronics Boutique, there was a different time then, and Electronics Boutique went the way of the world because its mission was to build great game stores, and GameStop doesn't, to my estimation, operate under that same sort of edict. They're necessarily really pressing hard to try and find ways to make money.
Yeah.
And it's tough.
Yeah.
Retail is an ugly business.
A couple of things, just facts from the story here that I dug up. One is, I mean, he was basically saying we're scaling back GameStop. So it doesn't sound like they're opening new stores.
Okay, maybe not.
Again, he doesn't say it definitively. But also, they own 100 to 150 Cricket Wireless locations as well.
Okay.
That's so weird. I mean, I get that they would want to expand. And I mean, if I were GameStop, this is all I'm getting at here. If I was any of these kind of retailers that are really, you know, most of them are bought up by GameStop now, so I guess it doesn't matter. But my point is, I feel like they are only smart if they are diversifying right now. Because if you're not diversifying, you're counting on a model that is, whether or not it's perfect now, and I'm not paying less to go to a console to download that game, but I'm certainly putting a price on the convenience of it. And if it's $59 here digitally and $59 in the store, and if I go over there, I'll just get it here and download that thing. Steam has ruined me that way.
The reason going to their stores is a bad experience, and the reason that cell phones work for them is that they are in a niche business, and their entire profit center is based around upselling everybody who comes in the door. They have to upsell because the primary thing that they sell doesn't really make them any money. So they have to upsell you on stuff, which means they have to be aggressive in sales, which means you have to have that experience that just isn't necessarily that great for you to go in. You don't want to go there.
Yeah.
You don't want to go there. It's not a fun experience in the least.
Right.
And that's a bummer.
If I could jump in here for a minute, I had a similar experience. I was a manager for Suncoast Motion Picture Company in the early 2000s. And I was there. I started as an assistant, became manager after about a year, and did that for about 4 years. And I was there to watch them go bankrupt, belly up. They got bought out by Best Buy. Best Buy pretty much, stripped them of their business practices and then, kind of quietly shut them down. And, as the DVD boom was fading, and I've seen this, and this whole thing, GameStop is in quicksand and they are scrambling. And, the mobile thing is desperate. This company, GameStop in general, will not be around in 5 more years. That's for sure.
You don't think that, do you think that whole brand is gone in 5 years?
Wow. I think that, this is interesting because we've all gone, I love going to the bookstore, but I don't know how Barnes & Noble's is going to be around in another 5 years.
I hate that idea. I love going
there.
I do
too. It breaks my heart. Yeah. I love, I have some very wonderful memories in bookstores. I really, really do. And it breaks my heart to think that I won't be able to just go in there and people watch and browse books physically. But we seem to be marching very quickly towards a digital-only era. There's a whole generation behind us where physical goods is an alien concept. As someone who does a show about toys and collectibles, even there, it's declining and changing. And you know, it is. There's a whole generation of people behind us that are just like, why would I waste my space with that? I'm going to jack in. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, yeah, GameStop. And my heart goes out to people who are going to lose their jobs.
Definitely.
But, because I'm unemployed. I'm looking for a gig. You know, I totally
hire
feel
Adam.
Hire me. Yeah. You know, but
or Garnett.
Garnett. I got no problem with that. I'd love to work with Garnett.
hire you both.
My heart goes out to the people who are going to be out of work. But what a crappy buying experience GameStop has always been, 110% of the time.
Yeah.
And you only go in there last time I ever went in, it was because I had to have the physical collector's edition of Star Trek Online. Don't laugh at me too hard.
That's not right. At all.
Yeah. And the only way, and this is when they were like, GameStop's got the classic uniforms. Amazon Online has the next gen uniforms. And Adam had to have all the uniforms. Yeah. So yeah, I had to physically walk in there for that. And that was like, do you want an extended warranty? Do you want to pre-order 5 titles? And I swore it was the last time I was ever going to step foot in a GameStop. And guess what? It has been. You know, everything's online, you know, Steam and all of it. So, you know, like I said, my heart goes out to those without a job, but good riddance. Get gone soon, GameStop. I won't miss you.
All right.
Can I ask you an extended question about that?
Yeah.
Sure.
So based off what you're saying, I want to put words in your mouth, but I have this theory because it comes up a lot in the games business. Everyone's, you know, very uptight about used game sales. And my theory is that used game sales is a non-issue because within a short time horizon, the major retailer for them, GameStop, goes away. And at that point, at best, it becomes a mom and pop shop sort of thing that doesn't have a real significant impact. And so it's a bunch of smoke and gnashing of teeth over something that really on its own organically goes away. What do you think about that?
No, totally. Because let's face it, unless you were buying a bargain basement title that had been out for a year or 6 months, you weren't saving a whole lot of money on the used game thing. You know, you took $5 off because it was open. Thanks, guys. You know,
exactly.
I mean, it's a non-issue. I mean, occasionally you got a great deal, but those days are gone. Those great deals are in this thing called Steam.
Yeah.
Yep. Those great deals are in this thing called Xbox Live. Yeah. Those great deals are on this thing called, you know, the PlayStation Network.
PlayStation
Plus, accessibility. Sure. You know, accessibility is no longer an issue. It's not like a game goes, oh my gosh, there's only 50,000 in print and they've all sold. No, it's digital. Yep. Just you want a copy of it. You click buy online.
Tom and I have talked to us about a bunch about this before on this show and others about when this stuff happens, what usually ends up happening is a place here in town called Gray Whale Music, which has been here since I was a kid. And they continue to thrive, not because they're selling the latest hot CDs. They thrive now because their business has evolved to be still mom and pop. They didn't have 50 million locations.
Customer
they have
one. Customer service, right?
It's customer service, and they focus on people who are really into collecting vinyl, and all the damn hipsters down there freaking love that place. And so that's where these things end up. So Tom's always said, well, you're always going to be able to get a hardbound edition of Batman Last Halloween or whatever the hell it was called, because there's always going to be a market for that coffee table thing. They're going to put it on the table. Yeah, for the rest of the year, you're going to buy your comics on Comixology or some other digital thing, but there's always going to be that thing. And so I agree with Garnett. That's where these things end up. It's the way the market corrects
customer
itself.
Customer service, sure. People, person to person, you know, absolutely. I have a friend who runs a comic book store locally. Business has never been better for him, even with the digital comic boom. It's actually brought in new customers.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. I never in a million years would have guessed that would have been the reaction, but people want, you know, once you find the thing you love, you still need to create the avenue for people to congregate and geek out about it.
Tabletop.
Hey, you know what? I got another example for you. Yeah. Do any of you have friends who vape?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Sounds like an anonymous society.
It does. It kind of does.
And so my friends who vape are not only are they, you know, evangelical about vaping, but they spend a good amount of time at vape shops. They like, because the vape shops are more like boutiques. They have lounges and couches and people just go and hang out and, you know, congregate and have cool geek conversations. And it's a cool cultural thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely
there was a part of that. Tobacco shop on the corner down here when I first moved here a year and a half ago, that was just kind of run down. It didn't look like it was in very good shape. And then 6 months later, it became a vape shop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now it's like busy. Yeah. There's people there all the time. So I can totally, that explains why right there.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, it changed my life. Now that the technology with vaping's there, I've been able to kick the analog cigarettes. So, you know, noticeable health improvement. So, you know, I feel 110. You know, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, it was tough. It's tough because you know what's tough about it? As I sidetrack here, what's tough about that whole thing is it's not the nicotine. It's the 400 or 500 other chemicals that your body freaks out missing.
Exactly.
When you switch.
Well, look, if I start smoking, I'm going straight to vape. I'm putting it out there right now. Straight. I'm skipping over the cigarettes completely, going right to vaping.
You'll do it. All the cool kids are. I'm kidding. Seriously, don't start vaping if you're not a smoker.
Right. Yeah.
Don't do that.
It's kind of a problem. Well,
from one end of the internet causing business model changes to the other end, Girls, GRLZ, sent us this story on our subreddit about Amazon Prime striking a deal to add old seasons of HBO shows to their streaming service. It's the first time that HBO has allowed anybody to stream their shows other than themselves on HBO Go. But they're not getting current seasons and they're not getting all the shows. They're getting The Sopranos, Six Feet Under, The Wire, Big Love, Deadwood, Eastbound and Down, Family Tree, Enlightened, Tremé, early seasons, not all the seasons, of Boardwalk Empire and True Blood, as well as miniseries like Band of Brothers, John Adams, and a few others of those. Previous seasons of other shows like Girls, The Newsroom, and Veep will become available over the course of the agreement approximately 3 years after airing on HBO.
I love the complete lack of the words Game of Thrones in this paragraph. Because, of course, they're not going to have that out there, and I totally get it. But I personally am stoked about this. I know a lot of people are kind of iffy on the Amazon Fire TV. I actually really like it a lot, to the point that that's kind of all I'm using now over a Roku and over an Apple TV I was using before. Mm. And most of it's the speed. A big part of it's my wife loves it and can just search for Veronica Mars by saying it. She loves that show. And this deal is a huge deal and a major coup, I think, over the bow of Netflix. So I'm pretty stoked. And they had me at Deadwood, honestly. So bring it. I'm ready. Let's do it. Excited. Am I the only one?
Definitely. All in.
All right. I mean, it's not the same as like week and week or day and date, right? But it's getting there. It's good.
Yeah, do you all have Amazon Primes? Because I've only ever sampled it. I've never been able to pull the trigger and say, yeah, I'm going to pay $100 a year.
I have to log in under my wife's account. Yeah.
I mean, we have one here at the house, but yeah.
Gotcha.
I love it. I don't know what life was like without it, to be honest. The shipping part alone is enough for me to want to do it.
Yeah, this is true. You know, I'm not doing as much shopping as I used to currently, but yeah, I think that's it. If I was full-time working and yeah, there would be a no-brainer to spend the $100. So this is cool, but I had to read it twice before I realized, oh, wait, no Game of Thrones. So,
yeah,
it's a little disappointing because really that's right now. That's about the only thing I care about coming out of HBO. That or maybe I want to watch reruns of Carnival. Maybe.
All these shows are good, though. And The Sopranos, I never saw it. And
Wait, hold on. You never saw The Sopranos?
No, dude. I know. Oh. Look, I need to give
you
a card.
I've never watched it either. I've never watched it.
My nerd.
I've never been into my mob stuff. So,
my drama, my card that says drama that changed the way TV was made card. I have to turn it in at some point because I realize the impact and the importance of that show, but I just never got around to it.
I'm sorry, Scott. No. The show that changed TV drama forever was clearly Babylon 5. You got that wrong.
You are smoking the crack. I'd give it to The Shield, but we could have that argument all day. In fact, I'm like Jeff Cannata suddenly here with The Shield talk.
Obviously, it was Dragnet.
Clearly. Obviously, it was Dragnet.
Anyway, it's exciting. Watch for it. That all starts happening May 21st. Before we get to the main stuff, this show today is brought to you by The Diablo Show, hosted by me, Scott Johnson, airing weekly on the Frog Pants Network starting next week. For details and subscription info, hit frogpants.com/Diablo. You'll be glad that you did.
In case you missed a look at one of the best-dressed beauties of the early 20s, here's another look at her. Had enough?
Yes, I've had enough. Let's get into the big stuff. Tom, I'm scared. Is the internet dying?
Yes, the internet's going away probably next week.
I'm terrified.
Do not be scared, but be alert. Essentially, what we're talking about is the whole net neutrality explosion, where FCC Commissioner Tom Wheeler announced that he would be submitting new open internet guidelines. Now, the background story, I'll try not to get too wonky on this. They had open internet guidelines that said you can't discriminate against traffic, you can't block legal traffic, and you have to be transparent. And Verizon sued, took them to court. The court said, you could do all of these things, FCC, in a couple of different ways, but that's not how you did them. And you, your legal justification is wrong. So we're throwing out these guidelines. They're no good anymore. Go back to the drawing board and come back with new guidelines. One of the ways the court said they could do this is to reclassify ISPs as a telecommunications service, which is what they were classified up until the early 2000s, which is why some of us in the United States may remember DSL used to have multiple competitors on the DSL lines because the telecommunications providers were required to open them up for competition. However, under Michael Powell, the FCC reclassified the ISPs as information providers, which is the same as what cable television is. And under those rules, you can't, they're not common, they're not what's called common carriers. So you can't force them to open lines, and there's limits on what you can regulate. So what Wheeler said is, I'm going to recast the regulations. I'm going to make it so they have to be transparent. Great. I'm going to make it so they can't block legal content. Awesome. But I'm going to allow them to discriminate against commercially reasonable methods, which opens the doors for what's called pay to play. In other words, instead of Netflix doing a deal with Comcast for an interconnect back on the backbone of the network, Comcast could say, hey, you want Netflix traffic to reach our customers first before everybody else and be the best video service? Pay us.
Yeah, it's also real open-ended. What do you think, Garnett? Bad.
I think that I like have to watch out about what part of the NSA might be listening in on our broadcast as I start into stuff that sounds almost revolutionary here, because this to me is the underlying problem here is how messed up our government has become and how it serves at the whim of big corporations. The problem here goes back to the fundamental problem with the whole thing, which is that the FCC is no longer operating the way it should be to protect the public interests and declare that the internet is a common carrier. And we can keep on dancing around the problem, and they can keep on coming up with these BS answers and trying to trot them out there and hope that you'll pay attention. They hope that it'll be like the nightly news on the network. They'll tell you, well, Tom, you know, we're taking care of internet neutrality with this new motion that we put out there. Don't read it. Just trust me. It's going to be better. We've got it all taken care of and everything will be fine. Go back to your job and enjoy your weekend. Yeah. But that's not the way it works.
Right. Yeah. And it seems to me that Tom has been my go-to all week on this. Like everything he posts makes sense to me. And it's been real nice because otherwise I feel like a baby lost in a basement and no one knows I'm there.
I agree with you.
Because this stuff terrifies me.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I feel like they know this. Like what you just said, it isn't that they don't know that. So what is motivating this? And if you're saying it's corporations and lobbies and, you know, whoever's got the biggest money pushing stuff around, that sounds on the surface of it to some as maybe a little conspiratorial, but I don't know where else it would come from.
The head of the FCC comes from the corporate world doing that. Of course it's about that.
Oh, you mean he was once the head of the CTIA, the Mobile Telephone Association, and also once the head of the NCTA, the Cable Television Association.
Surprise!
Whoops, how did that happen?
That's really depressing. So is this just an issue of us all not being dumb and rising up like Garnett's calling for a revolution here and act, yes. Take it back, I guess.
As the BBC pointed out a couple of weeks ago, the United States is an oligarchy now, like it or not.
That's depressing.
Yeah, yeah. The people with the very deep pockets, you know, make these, you know, run things, and it frightens me because if you know, to get conspiratorial for a minute, especially when I stand like in, you know, North Station waiting for a train, you know, for example, and you got the things and the dogs and the police walking around, and I'm like, I live in a sci-fi movie.
Yeah,
I live in a real bad near future dystopian future, and nobody's really like the general people just seem to be okay with it, and it. So I'm afraid. I mean, yeah, I'm, you know, Tom speaks sense, but I'm with Garnett. This needs to be made a utility. You know, they just need to, like, you know, it needs to be available to everybody equally, you know, without, you know, people being, you know, without commercial interests deciding whose content's going to get there faster, you know.
Well, as a guy who would prefer oligarchy was a thing I could order at Macaroni Grill, Tom, Tom, I go to you now with, give us some sense. Make us feel better.
Talk us off the ledge, Tom.
I think you need to be on the ledge on this one, frankly. Maybe not until May 15th, which is when the FCC will have their meeting and Wheeler will circulate the memo before that, but get the vote on, okay, is this going to be our proposal? And then they'll open it up for a 90-day comment period. The one thing about the FCC is they are very open to hearing what people have to say about stuff. There's a button right there at FCC.gov right now where you can send him your information. But once he does that meeting on May 15th, there'll be a docket item that you can cite and say, regarding this particular thing, here's what I think. Right. So there's that part to keep in mind. The other side of this, I totally agree with Garnet that really at root for me, what we should be talking about is, can there be competition? If there can be competition among ISPs, then a lot of these problems don't become immediate. The FCC doesn't have to do a dance. They don't have to force their way in. And to come up with competition, a lot of people think common carrier is the way you do it, because why would you run 15 lines to someone's house, have someone who's built the infrastructure get the benefit of running those lines, but then have rules that allow them to open it up, you know, or guarantee that it'll be open for other people to compete on those lines. And we're not even talking about that, because there's all kinds of but if you do that, it might, you know, slow down innovation. And Mark Andreessen has talked about that. That's fine. But we're not even talking about competition. We're talking about, okay, we're just not even going to consider common carrier, which is where the influence of money comes. And it's interesting to me that everybody here is like, well, I don't want to be conspiratorial, as if it were unreasonable to say that money is influencing politics.
Yeah.
It's not. This is what's insidious about it. It's actually not Tom Wheeler taking a payment from Comcast or Verizon to run these rules through. It's not. That's why they can get away with it. People would catch that. Journalists would catch that. You know, the FBI would catch that. It's their job. But they don't, because it doesn't work that way. In reaction to all these rules that are in place and these laws in place against actual corruption, we've got a system, and I know I'm going a little off the rails here, we've got a system of influence. So what happens is it's unspoken. Tom Wheeler knows, well, if I go common carrier, then all these guys are going to stop donating and they're going to stop supporting me. They don't have to tell me they're going to do that. I just know it's going to happen. So I've got to keep that in mind, right? And even if he doesn't think he's keeping it in mind, it's in his mind that he knows that's going to affect him. If you really want to understand how this is all playing out, I highly recommend Republic Lost by Lawrence Lessig. It's all about how money is influencing government in all situations, not just a situation like this, in ways that are hard to put your finger on. They're not breaking the law. It's the system actually has figured out how to route around and give the people with the most money the most influence.
Bam, drop the gavel on that, brother.
Jeez, yeah, can you put that down? That was it. There you go. Gavel in the cloud is spoken. Fantastic. All right, well, let's move on to this Nokia deal real quick just to lighten the load. Woo!
I know. More Microsoft. Even a punctuation point on that. Yeah. If you follow O'Malik, he tweeted the one thing that we could look for here, which is to get the Silicon Valley contributors to Barack Obama's presidency to make their voice heard, because they are a outside source of money and they will have a source of influence, but they only get motivated when those money gatherers come to them. They need to turn around and say, hey, you know, they have their representative from the DNC or whoever who contacts them when they need money. They need to call them back and say, hey, next time you call me and you're looking for money, I'm going to remember how you followed up on this internet neutrality issue.
Wow. Yeah. I think we're going to see a SOPA PIPA like reaction here.
All right.
I hope so.
Everyone's Twitter avatar will change, but none of those people actually do anything. Yay. I can't wait. All right.
SOPA got defeated, Sky.
I know. I do not want to be negative about it. The truth is, of these things, I'm usually a lot more like, now wait, let's see how it goes. Everyone calm down. But this is one of those cases where I actually feel like, no. Everybody, this is real bad. In fact, SOPA seems like a walk in the park compared to this in some ways. So, everybody rise up, get your pitchforks, and let's go. I should
buy a Microsoft phone.
I'm going to get in trouble for that.
Yeah.
Tell me about this. Phones. What's going on? They're like, now they're giant hardware manufacturers now, suddenly, because they bought them.
Yeah, so essentially today, finally, 8 months later after they said they were going to do it, they finally finished all the regulatory approvals and everything, and Microsoft owns Nokia's phone business. I won't go into all the various details. Nokia still exists. They've got their mapping arm and their research arm and their network infrastructure, but Microsoft has the phones, and they have the rights to use some names and this and that. But essentially, Microsoft just became the second largest phone manufacturer by sales in the world.
Wow. Think of that. That's a lot of Windows phones potentially then. Except they're doing a lot of Windows phones. Well, I mean, Nokia's putting out, they're doing an Android phone coming up soon here, right? Some
Nokia X is an Android based phone, but it's a fork, kind of like the Kindle Fire is. Mm. So yeah. It uses all Microsoft services.
All right. Anyone use Windows phone here? Any Windows phone aficionados?
All
right.
I'm kind of all in on the Google sphere at this point.
So you're all Android. I'm iOS these days. Tom, you're iOS, but you do some Android stuff on tablets and things.
I have a Nexus 7 I like.
Garnett, what are you doing?
I'm iOS. I moved over to the iOS world when we were developing because it's a stronger gaming platform. Prior to that, I was Google.
Yeah, that's right.
I really, really tried to love my Surface RT. I'm
just just wasn't happening.
Artists really like the Pro, though, the Surface Pro.
That said, yeah. Prior to the era of smartphones, nobody topped Nokia and Symbian phones. I mean, they were the thing to have, and their quality still, you know, to this day is in that same spot. If you've seen anybody who has a 41 megapixel camera in that crazy Nokia Windows phone,
yeah, I think it's the 2140.
Maybe it's 21. It's pretty impressive. It makes spectacular photographs. And 8.1 operating system. I have a couple of friends who have Windows phones, Microsoft folks, of course. Yeah. But it is pretty snazzy. They have to get the ecosystem. You can have all the hardware in the world, but if you don't have the ecosystem, you're dead in the water.
Yeah. But like Tom keeps saying, they're like 10% of the overall market, right? That's not bad if you look at the overall, the playership of the market. I can't even think of their name, BlackBerry at this point?
Yes, they are. Windows Phone worldwide is strong third place. In fact, they're actually really big in Europe.
Yeah.
Not as popular in the U.S.
Yeah.
To be fair, people who use it seem to love it. I don't, you know, no folks who use it that hate it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. My mom loves hers. She uses one.
Yeah.
She got talked into it and won't go back, so...
have to get the ecosystem. There has to be a case because look, we've gotten all spoiled if you've had, you know, a Google environment or an iOS environment to anything that we do, any activity that we have. Let's say we're snowboarders. Well, there's an app for every aspect of our snowboarding life, whether it's like going on runs or finding the best ski lifts or finding the best chateau to go to or any of those things. There's an app for it. Yeah. And until Windows Phone can compete with that, they can have the best hardware in the world, but they can't have that scale.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. Well, that, ladies and gentlemen, leads us right straight into the headlights of the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right, let's see how these guys do. It's a part of the show where we where we do a pop quiz for both of you, and we do it in areas of your expertise. I have not forewarned you. You're just going to get what you're going to get. We're going to start with Garnett. Garnett, your topic is... F1 related video games.
Excellent.
Because I know you're a fan.
I am indeed.
You always hear about your F1 good times you're having. So we're gonna and the real sport itself. I know you're into that too. So
yes.
we're gonna lay these on you. Let's see how you do. Question. Oh, and Tom's gonna score this whole thing. He does it really weirdly. So be prepared for that.
Oh boy.
It's a very complex system of rules, as I keep telling Scott.
Yeah, it's very strange. I find it just weird. But here it is.
I'm also a big fan of Forza Motorsports.
Oh yeah, Forza's great. Nothing. Some of them. The latest one that has issues.
GT6 anyway. Is better.
Yeah, I agree. Garnett Lee, here's your first question.
Yes.
What year was Pole Position released in arcades?
1993.
Incorrect. The answer is 1982, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, my Lord.
You were a decade off.
I was like, what?
You're going to get a half-point decade penalty there.
Wow. Okay. See, I told you. It's dreadful. Weird.
This is going to be a disaster.
It's weird. All right. What game?
A beautiful disaster.
Here you go. What game is considered the first true Formula One racing simulator?
Grand Prix Legends.
You are... Hold on. Correct. Nicely done. What game by Codemasters took Formula One and turned it into something similar to Mario Kart?
F1 Race Star.
You are correct. And I see
that's my quick bonus.
Yeah, you're rocking it now.
Well, you hit two that I knew right off the bat.
What Formula One racing game did Steve Wozniak play while developing Breakout?
Oh, good God.
I didn't even know he developed Breakout, so that's what I know.
I'm about to say Uncle on. I have no idea.
All right. It would be Grand Track 10 was the name of that game. That's a hard one, dude. Who would know that? What was the final Formula One game released by EA Sports?
By EA Sports?
Yeah, they had their
game. Sony had the license, and then... Wow, F1 2002 or something. I don't know.
Oh, the F1 part is right, but it would have been F1 Career Challenge.
Oh, I'm going to give him half point for getting the F1.
See? It's weird. It's so weird.
Scoring. I like it.
Next up, you got three more here. See how you do. Sony has developed some Formula One games for the PlayStation 2. What was the first of their games to have a career mode?
Oh, the first one with a career mode. Wow, that's a in deep dive sort of thing. That would be F1 2008.
Oh, you're four years off. 04. 04 was the year. You would have had it. All right.
Well, I was going to give a half point for being close, but then you lose a half point for an insincere read. So it just kind of balances out.
Perfectly fair.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Also, PlayStation 2 was not a big deal in 04, or 08 rather.
It was something maybe they were trying to add in at the end to keep people.
Yeah.
They held onto that license way late, but they didn't carry it over. They were trying to keep it, you know, resuscitated for the European market.
This is true. See, you know where that stuff will ever know. All right,
I'm
next.
Giving a half point just for that.
See, I'm telling you, these things don't hurt when you do it. Sometimes they do. All right, what is the name of the engine used in developing Formula One 2009 and 2010? Either of those versions.
The Codemasters Magic Special Enigma Racing Goodness Engine.
Incorrect. It is the Ego Engine. It is also used in Grid and Dirt. Both those games use it.
He's going to get a quarter point for having the spirit of the answer correct.
Nice. He's going to get this one right. Last question. Codemasters currently has the license to make these games based on Formula One. Who had this license right before them?
Sony.
You are correct. Nicely done.
Half point quick bonus.
All right. So Tom has kept your score. Hang on to it because you'll be compared in a moment. We're going over to Adam now. Adam, are you ready?
Good luck, Adam.
I am ready.
Star Wars trivia, sir.
Star Wars?
Because you're a nerd. You're kind of a nerd when it comes. Yeah, look at it with your thing. Nicely done. I have one of those. The same color, too. I love that one. We're talking
I got the
about
other side of the sports.
All right, here you go. What game of chance did Lando lose, causing him to lose the Millennium Falcon to Han Solo?
Sabacc.
You are correct. Nicely done. I did not know that. In the Mos Eisley Cantina, we see a small alien getting very excited over a drink. This alien is called Cabe or Cabe. What is the name of the drink this alien gets?
Blue milk.
You are incorrect. It's called Jury Juice. Jury Juice.
I'm going to give him a quarter point because it does look like blue milk.
Okay, fine. See, it's weird. What is Grand Moff Tarkin's first name? I'd love this one.
Grant.
What is it?
Bob?
Nope. It's Wilhuff. Will Huff Tarkin.
No, I actually knew that at one point.
Did you? I never heard that.
It's because it was on the box for the action figure.
Oh. I know a lot of useless stuff about Star Wars. I have never known Grand Moff Tarkin's first name.
Well, you know his famous line, you may never say my first name when ready. All right, here's the next one. What is the name of the Rancor keeper / handler?
Frank.
You are incorrect. It is Malakili.
You know, I did know that. Shame on me.
Shame on you.
Yeah, you're losing a quarter point.
I knew it. What is the name of the general? What is the name of General Veers AT-AT in the Battle of Hoth?
I think you just gave away the answer to that, sir. General Veers.
No, you are incorrect. It is the Blizzard One. The Blizzard One.
Ow.
Next up. Actually, it's what you say every time a new MMO comes out. You say Blizzard 1. come on. That was pretty good.
That's a point for Scott Johnson.
Thank you. And I'm not even in the running. All right, next up. What cell block is Princess Leia being held in?
2241.
1138. Isn't there a game based on that? Or there was going to be?
1138.
Oh, 1138. Oh, yeah. All right. That was familiar. Second to last question. How much is Han Solo supposed to get paid for taking Obi-Wan, Luke, and the droids to Alderaan? How many credits? I'll give you a hint that it's credits. It's not quat lose. Mm-hmm. How much?
40,000?
17 grand. 17,000.
I was factoring in for inflation. Oh, I apologize.
I see. Yeah. All right.
Well, then there's half now, half when we get there.
Yeah. That's a good explanation.
Yeah, you're going to get a quarter point for that.
All right. I think, all right, fine. Final question. Vader likes to force choke people. Vader found a certain Imperial officer's lack of faith disturbing and choked him. What is the name of the officer he chokes?
Captain Nita.
Admiral Mati is the one he said, I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Okay. I was thinking Empire.
Yeah. Yes. So there you go. That's you've done it.
I think I have to give back my lightsaber now. I apologize.
Aww. That's all right. It's okay. I have to give back my Sopranos card. So we're all in good company here. So Tom, let's add them up. How'd they do? Where'd they end up?
Sure. Now Adam ended up with a respectable 1.25, but Garnet raced to a victory with 5 points.
Raced to a victory.
Hey.
See, nicely done.
Very nice. Congrats.
Yes. Way to go, Garnet Lee. You deserve all the accolades you get for playing F1 games because I cannot get into those. I try, but I can't. All right. Enough of that. Let's get to what used to be a segment, or used to be a show. It's now a segment.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
It's Forecast, everybody. It's where we take an idea from the future or a thing we think will happen in the future, and we talk about it a little bit on the show. Tom, you do this one because you stole it from somebody. I want to hear what happened here.
Yeah, Darren Kitchen mentioned this on Daily Tech News Show today. He thinks that drones are going to become the next GoPro sensation. You know how everybody does a GoPro on their head when they're skiing or whatever? Mm-hmm. He's already seeing early signs of this. People having drones follow them while they do sports. He actually did a skateboarding video that he called Drone Boarding, where he's skateboarding along with and controlling the drone, filming him from in front. So not too long from now, maybe a few years, ski slopes, hiking trails, there's going to be a buzz with drones filming people as they walk around.
Well, the hot new thing are these quadcopters, right? Where for relatively little money.
That's the drones we're talking about in most cases. There's a few different models.
Yeah, they're not bad. And they're holding the weight of like Mark III, Canon cameras and stuff that do real great video. They don't necessarily have to have a crappy camera, and they're stable and not too big, not too small, and they're getting great shots for things. I heard a podcast with Adam Savage where they talked about using those a bunch on this season of Mythbusters coming up, and I don't know how they're using them, but a lot of overhead shots and things. That's awesome. Like, imagine that versus the old way of doing it, which is renting crane operators or doing flybys and planes, which is a huge bunch of money to do that for whatever overheads or aerials you need. And now you can just do it yourself. Just fly one up there, and for $1,000 or less, you're done. It's great. Any thoughts? Anyone disagree?
Yes, not going to happen. No, is the future? I totally agree.
Super cool. The one thing they ever have to figure out is some sort of avoidance radar anti-collision system.
Oh, right.
Yeah, proximity sensors.
Yeah, some sort of proximity sensor. And once they've got that figured out, then we can finally have our flying cars.
Oh, man. I didn't even think about this. What you just suggested is somebody's quadcopter from some dude in Arizona could get sucked into an engine I'm flying in, and that's the end of that plane. Great.
Well, no, hold on, Scott, before you freak out. The FAA is actually on top of that and is really trying to crack down on altitude regulations for these and how they should be regulated. Right now, nobody can fly them up where they would get in a flight path. That is absolutely illegal.
Well, that seems like
even the FAA is even trying to say, well, you can't fly them here and there, and people are pushing back, but that's probably not going to happen unless somebody's totally flaunting the rules.
Well, it seems to me that's in the public's interest. So couldn't the FAA just walk down the hall to the FCC guys and say, guys, we got this figured out over here. What's your problem?
They probably do.
Yeah.
They probably just go down and taunt them all the time.
Indeed. Also, we allowed
cell phones on planes. What's your issue?
Yeah, what's your problem? VR will become a part of our daily lives much sooner than I think the general public realizes, says Adam. Adam, explain. What do you think?
Well, I mean, again, Oculus Rift is, from the little bit I got to try it, because I did get to try it, the Gen 2, the Gen 1.
Yeah.
I think what we're going to find is, with Facebook having bought over, the Oculus Rift is going to be that device that breaks it through. Like, you know how Caprica, it was like their implant for the net was the thing that brought everybody into the future on that show. I have a feeling Oculus Rift is going to be that breakthrough tech that's going to bring VR to everybody in a way they're not expecting. And I think in the very short future, probably within the next 5 years, we're going to find more and more people not leaving the house to stay home in the VR. You already got people telecommuting in the corporate environment left and right. You know, I mean, that's happening. VR is going to take on, like I said earlier in the show, we were talking about gaming, the future waves of games are going to be doing this. You know, you combine VR with an MMO, you know, I mean, hello.
Plus, it's dangerous out there, all those drones.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. With all those drones flying around filming everything and delivering my Amazon packages, right. I have got to stay in the house.
Well, Garnett, I always see you running on Twitter. Tom, I always see you posting your Nike results or whoever you're using. I'm way more active than I used to be. And the question is this, would you guys be interested? So Garnett, I'll ask you directly. Do you think it would be cool if your treadmill came with a headset that you would just plop on and you would be given all of the visual stimuli of terrain changing, going uphill, downhill, have all kinds of different routines you could dynamically have sort of happen in your view space, but be at home on the treadmill, stay out of all the carcinogenic polluted air of LA and just do it at home?
No, but Scott, I'm old. So, you know, I'm the wrong person to ask. I really enjoy running outside for two reasons. You know, one is that I feel like I get a much better fitness boost out of running where I have to move myself as opposed to it. I mean, there's no place in the world that I know of where the ground comes to meet me on a motorized wheel.
Yeah.
Like it does on a treadmill. And then just also, you know, it's great to be outside. Yeah. The air here is awful, but it's great to be outside and I really enjoy that. And actually I wouldn't want to have such a lure to stay inside with a headset and a virtual reality over getting out and seeing the real thing.
Yeah. For a different generation, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, I hope we don't get to that point. I hope that humans can always, I have the same hopes for personal, you know, interaction between humans. I don't want us to get to a point, you know, I feel like at some point in time, everybody having their head buried in their phones at restaurants and bars actually starts to go back the other direction because we realize, wow, this is really not that great of an experience. Mm-hmm. And by the way, hanging out and talking to someone over a beer is a lot more fun than hanging out with someone having a beer while we're both looking at our phones.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I got to check in on Untappd. Hold on.
Windows phone.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, I'm looking forward to being able to explore, you know, these fun universes in a virtual way. But you're right, Garnet. You know, realistically, you know, I have to be very conscious to get up and walk outside, you know, go out, you know, like I do it all the time. Like I go to the store and go buy some extra cat food. You like get out of the house, go for a walk around the block because I spend so much time in front of the computer. You're right.
You have a cat?
I do have
it. Okay, good. I'm just checking.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Make sure you should. That'd be a little weird.
Is your cat named after a Star Wars character?
No. Okay. She was named when she came to me. She actually adopted me. I didn't adopt her.
Oh, wow. So she named you Bonfar or some other kind of Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I am definitely her human. She is not my cat. But
that's all cats. Sure. Just not to break it to anybody out there, but that's all cats everywhere. Exactly. Well, nicely done, everybody. Let's get to a quick email here. We get feedback from you guys each and every week, and we really appreciate it. CurrentGeek@gmail.com is a simple email address to remember and send things to. So keep them coming. Got one from James in Detroit who says, hey, guys, last week on the forecast segment, Tom mentioned using the way a person types to secure passwords in the future. I remember that. I think he was specifically suggesting using how fast a person types and the time between button presses to tell if it was the person it was supposed to be. This reminds me of a story a few years back about a pressure-sensitive keyboard Microsoft developed, but apparently didn't know what to use it for, so they just held a contest. One of the winning entries was a program that could tell if it was you typing the password. Even if someone else knew the password, they couldn't log on. So, Tom, you're right about it, but I don't think anyone has bothered to implement it. I love the show, especially the game show, James in Detroit. So, and he put an old link to the actual pressure-sensitive keyboard, and if you type it different than I do, it wouldn't do it. But my guess is there was a lot of errors there because I don't always type the same speed or the same pressure. Like, how would you ever train such a thing?
There's actually been a lot of studies done where your typing is close enough. It's, you know, that they can tell a pattern and it gets more accurate over time. I don't think the cost of implementing it server side is attractive enough to replace the password systems that everybody uses.
Yeah, I could see that.
Do one where if I come home after a couple of beers, it recognizes that I shouldn't be Facebook messaging anybody?
And tell you?
Actually, I wouldn't be surprised if they couldn't be like, well, we can tell it's Garnet, but something's off. We're going to lock him out of email now.
Warning, Garnet, do not send. You'll regret this tomorrow kind of thing.
There you go. Yeah. All right. Perfect.
I like it. Yeah, well, there you go. Great, great email. Always good emails. You guys keep those coming to us. Again, that email address is currentgeek@gmail.com. And that brings us to the end of today's show. As sad as I am.
Damn it.
It has to end at some point. Let's go around the table, though, and give people a chance to tell us what they've got going on and where they can be found and what's happening. Garnett, let's start with you. Where can people find more Garnett Lee on the internet?
I feel like I'm a little bit of butter spread across too much toast.
Well, start eating yourself or something. Anyway, I don't know what that means.
You can catch up with me every week. I do two podcasts. One of them also has a video component. So the first one is my sort of evolving solo show that's all based around call-in stuff. So we're using SpeakPipe so that gamers can call in and leave messages and have a sort of talk radio vibe to it. That's Garnett on Games.
Love that show, by the way. Just absolutely love it. Yeah, I said this on Twitter, but I really mean it. The kind of the core concept of how I'm going to handle this new Diablo show is based quite a bit on what you're doing there. It was very inspirational on that level. So nice work. I really like it.
I don't know what to say. Thanks.
Bring a tear to the old Garnett eye there.
You know, it's the same thing. I every time I've done a podcast, I've just sort of studied up. You know, it was before we did Weekend Confirmed or before we did One Up Yours, really back in the day. I did a lot of studying on, you know, actual theory of radio shows and went back to, you know, those old broadcast journalism classes I took in the college days and was like, hey, you know what? There might be something to this stuff.
Sure. They knew what they were doing.
Might be a reason that things work. Anyway, also doing the First for Gamers podcast with John Davison, which we record as a live stream on Wednesday afternoons and then goes up on audio. And, you know, I'm on Facebook. You can catch up with me there, Garnett on Games, or on Twitter at Garnett Lee, GARNETTLEE.
Nice. It's recommended, folks. Dude, man, what's going over there, Pulaski? Pulaski? I got her right the second time.
I wanted to highlight. I'm looking in the notes, and I think Scott here was trying to. I think it's Pulaskin.
Pulaskinheimen. That's the one.
I was like, no, he's close, I guess.
Adam, what are you up to, man? Where can people go?
Oh, well, currently I do a weekly video podcast called Collection DX The Show. It's basically myself and Josh Bernard, sort of the creator of Collection DX, the site, where the site is generally we have a lot of folks who contribute reviews of vintage and modern Japanese toys, collectibles, sci-fi stuff. It's kind of a whole mix, but if you're into sci-fi, you're probably going to like our site. And we kind of scrape the site every week, pick some topics, talk about it. It's a lot of fun, and you can find, you know, links to that and how to get involved right there on collectiondx.com. Also myself, in an effort to try and do something with all this fancy, you know, broadcasting streaming equipment I have for CDX, do some YouTube stuff recently, and I'm doing some Twitch streaming, and I swore off video games, but I seem to keep getting pulled back into it. So adam12.net is really the best place to kind of link to all of that, at0mxii.net. And, you know, it's a little rough right now, the site, but I am updating it, and it does point to everything. So if you like what you heard here, please come check me out. I would appreciate it.
Awesome. Tom Merritt, what else is going on with you, man?
Before we go, Garnett, do you have a ring that you've been putting on a lot?
Do I have a ring that I've been putting on a lot?
You know, like makes you invisible.
What are you talking about?
Well, he said he felt like butter spread across too much.
It reminded me of
somebody I used to know. Had a thing with the. So,
Tom, do we need to know anything, Garnett? Do we need to have an intervention? No. Is everything all right?
You get addicted to invisibility and.
Are you going to get evil face if I try to take it?
Garnett, are you going to eat breakfast 4 times a day? That's what I want to know.
Slowing the coolness of the reference.
It's just killing it. We're burying it.
Okay. Sorry for blowing the reference.
That's all right. I've already been told I should eat myself too. So it's all whole.
Either way, it's going real good that way.
Hey, everybody, let me distract you with FSLTonight.com. Justin Robert Young and I report on fantasy sports, which is not what you think it is because it has almost no sports in it and a lot of fantasy and science fiction. Teams made up from fantasy and sci-fi franchises compete in a season, and we tell you what happens over the course of 12 to 13 weeks. So if you are interested, check out FSLTonight.com. And if you want to see season 4 happen, click on our Kickstarter.
Sounds fantastic. It's going to do it for us, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us. Don't forget, you can find us on the web at, gosh, where is it? CurrentGeek.com. Go there. Current Geek on Twitter as well. You can find me at Scott Johnson, Tom at Ace Detect. And we'll be back next week with a brand new show. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you then.
Welcome to This Week in Comics. I'm Aaron Steinberg, and I'm here to take you through the good, the bad, the new, and the noteworthy in the world of comics. And as usual, my reviews may contain spoilers, so if you don't want to be spoiled, you should probably read the book in question before listening. Let's get down to brass tacks, shall we? My pick this week falls squarely in the noteworthy sections of things, because while it wasn't a bad comic book, it certainly wasn't the best book I read this week. That honor belongs to Daredevil number 2. Anyways, my pick of the week this week is the Zero issue of the upcoming Marvel crossover event Original Sin. Written by Mark Waid and drawn by a bunch of people, namely Jim Cheung and Paco Medina, Original Sin Zero took us on a journey to the moon to show us a heartfelt interaction between Nova and Uatu the Watcher. While conceptually fantastic, it was at times bogged down by excessive monologue and some story beats that didn't feel overly necessary. Despite 2 pencilers and 5 inkers, though, the art felt consistent and polished. Overall, I give Original Sin Zero a C+ for having a great concept, but sometimes lacking in execution. If you plan on keeping up with the Original Sin crossover event, and it looks like it's going to be a good one, you'll definitely want to pick this issue up. For more tantalizing comic deliciousness, you can find me on the web at www.epiccomicshow.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at Epic Comic Show. Until next time, this has been This Week in Comics.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, the subject is whether Apple, Google, and other tech giants have conspired to break antitrust laws. Initial settlement was announced of a class action lawsuit that had been pending against Apple, Google, Intel, and Adobe since 2011. This class action followed a DOJ investigation in 2010. This lawsuit alleged illegal deals to not hire away each other's employees in an effort to keep salaries down in Silicon Valley. But does this settlement mean that collusion was actually happening? Class action lawsuit that extends over multiple years can lead to some very extensive discovery of documents and interviews or interrogatories as well. In this pretrial litigation process, several smoking gun emails had already been uncovered and made public. Most notably, former CEOs Steve Jobs and Eric Schmidt corresponded about a Google recruiter being fired after he solicited an Apple employee to leave for Google. In other words, the evidence that came to light does not look good. Rather than go to trial and have their companies drag through the litigation mud, these high-tech giants are cutting the potential losses by paying some amount to the class of employees. The bottom line is, although these companies do love to battle in court when it comes to competing patents, the competition does apparently stop when it is to the mutual benefit and profit margins of all involved. Hopefully, the DOJ investigation and this class action payday will discourage such practices from happening again in the future. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions as segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.